Okay. I've turned down my headphones.
Fine.
It sounds like everything's yelling in my face.
They should be yelling in your face.
Why?
Because you're being dumb.
Why? Like, why am I like, being dumb?
Well, you have a tendency to cut off the last note of our theme
song. Yeah,
that's
my thing.
Which it needs a little air. It needs that's a little, my thing. It needs a little echo.
My thing is abrupt.
It's abrupt and dopey when you just slam it down.
I am abrupt.
You're abruptum, but not for this show.
I am also dopey, and that is my thing. This is Linoleum Knife, a podcast of the cinema.
Yes, it is.
You're Alonzo Duralde of the rap and movies. No. You're Alonzo Duralde. That's correct.
Yes.
You're from the rap.
Also correct.
Also, you're from What the Flick.
Yes. And you are Dave
You're
White.
Not from... Well, you do write a thing for movies.com.
Yeah,
but
once a month, but...
You're not...
Of
the man movies. From movies.com.
The way that you,
I'm
Dave White, are.
The man from movies.com.
Also from Uncle.
And Gower Gulch.
Yeah, you're the girl from Uncle Eddie.
And Snowy River. And the man from Snowy River.
And who wasn't there. Oh, actually, funnily enough, one of the movies, this didn't wind up being my DVD pick this week, but they're putting out on Blu-ray. Did you ever see that Bill Murray movie, The Man Who Knew Too Little?
No, I never did see that.
It's actually pretty funny. It's slight and it's minor, but it's funny. Mm. Do you know the premise?
No.
He is a American tourist in London. He's visiting, like, I forget if it's his brother or something. And they're basically trying to, the brother or whoever it is he's visiting is kind of a diplomat and has some fancy dinner. So he's trying to get rid of Bill Murray for the night. So he signs him up in one of those sort of, like, interactive dinner theater things.
Right.
But, of course, Bill Murray winds up going to the wrong place and gets involved with actual spies. And he manages to get through it all because he thinks it's all fake. And that he's not really being shot at, you know. And, of course, he winds up at the fancy dinner and, you know, wackiness ensues. It's actually pretty funny.
What year is that from?
'90s, I think. It's post-Quick Change.
Really?
Yeah, I think the guy who co-directed Quick Change with him directed this one.
I see. No, yeah. I don't. Yeah. So,
you're the man who knew too little. That's what it is.
about this one Bill Murray movie, yeah.
But nothing else.
But nothing.
Nothing else.
Literally nothing else.
I saw this headline this week, and I didn't want to read the article because it would depress me. Is it true that there's some dictionary now where basically they're allowing figuratively to be one of the definitions of literally?
I think that's fake.
I hope it's fake.
That has to be fake.
Because that just makes it crazy.
Just because people are misusing something over and over again doesn't make it right.
No, but sometimes it just gets beaten into the language anyway, like the way people say hopefully.
There's a colloquial way of saying literally that's completely the opposite of the actual definition of the word.
Of the literal definition.
Yeah. And that may be in common usage by stupid people, but that doesn't make it right. And no, I don't care how many dictionaries it finds itself in.
But
if, in fact, this is not a fake out,
right?
If it's in a dictionary... Then F that dictionary and all the people who use the word incorrectly. The public, as I was just saying while doing the dishes and we were having our conversation, before these microphones came on, the public is stupid and I hate them.
But you know what? I think dumb people misusing things is just how the language changes.
No. No. The language changes... By creative misuse, not dumb misuse.
Well,
and I think there should be a distinction made.
I always remember in the Little Women movie, somebody says a word like swell or lousy or something, and they get scolded for using slang.
Yeah.
Like, and it's like, well, it was at a time, and now it's not. You know, I'm sure Thomas Jefferson wouldn't stop clutching his ears if he heard how we were talking now, you know. It's just one of those things that language evolves or devolves by popular usage, and popular usage tends to be stupid. I don't know. You're looking at me like I was coming to some grand conclusion. I have no idea.
I don't want to live this life.
Thank you, Nancy Spungen. should we talk about movies?
There are going to be six films mm-hmm. that get discussed
yes.
this week on The Linoleum Knife. Mm-hmm. Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps you've heard of it.
Get On Up.
Mm-hmm.
A documentary called Alive Inside.
Right.
And then three films that you saw and I did not. One of them is A Most Wanted Man. And you made me promise that I would see it last week before we could both talk about it together. And I made that promise to you. Now that promise has been broken and you are going to talk about it on your own self.
Because your promises are bunk.
And then you're going to also talk about Calvary and Child of God.
Mm-hmm.
Those are three you're going to talk about alone.
Yes.
While I don't listen. Or tell you that you are boring. So get ready.
You're a great co-host.
Get ready for
that. Can I just say, so giving. So understanding.
Let's get the big dumb Galaxy of the Guardians out of the way. And
Galaxy of the Guardians?
That one.
Yes.
And the and so that anyone who doesn't care about anything else can just turn off the podcast when they're done.
Well, then by that nature, shouldn't we do it last?
They may turn it off before we get there. At least at this, if we give them Guardians first...
Mm-hmm.
At least they'll hear that much. They will also have heard us say, buy a Linoleum Knife t-shirt for $20.
Right. PayPal us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
We are all out of 3XL.
Oh. Okay.
We ordered two of them.
And they've been snapped up?
And they were snapped up by really large dudes.
Because
if you are a really large dude, you can ask us... For more mm-hmm. 3XLs, let's say you're an even larger, really large dude, and you need a 4. Does this company go up to 4?
They do go up to 4.
All right.
Yeah,
let whatever us know. Size you need.
We'll make it happen.
We'll get one eventually for you, but
I believe
not right now, because they are gone.
Okay, because I believe a Trucker Patty, actually, who I met at Outfest, but
yes.
a legendary... Sirius XM listener and the subject of the documentary Trucker Patty that
uh-huh.
premiered this year at Outfest.
Yeah.
Asked me if they came in 3X because, as she put it, the gals need fabric.
Yes.
So I will have to tell Trucker Patty that we're out of 3XL, but we'll get more.
Okay. Yeah, well, we will.
But we have just about all the others.
We have all the other sizes. So all the way down.
PayPal
to a little tiny person.
$20 at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Include your size for a Hanes 100% cotton tagless beefy tee. And, of course, your mailing address.
The other thing you're going to buy is the new Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife episode. That is not free. It is for sale for $1.99, in which we discuss the importance of the film Josie and the Pussycats, 2001's maligned, overlooked, box office ignored, Josie and the Pussycats.
We discussed the movie from ears for hats to long tails.
Yes, all the way, beginning to end, the entire running time. You will learn not to badmouth Tara Reid by the end of this by the end of this episode. And if you are going to keep badmouthing Tara Reid, you're no friend of mine.
Well, you know, this week I had the very good fortune pleasurable experience to appear on the Bret Easton Ellis podcast.
That has not aired yet.
It will be going live on Monday, so by the time people hear this, it's either about to go live or it already has.
Yeah.
But he was telling me that with all of the contemporary films that he does not particularly care for, he really did enjoy Sharknado 2.
Yeah.
Particularly because of a moment in which Tara Reid is on an airplane hanging out the side with the Sharknado coming at her, and a shark with a scar on its face locks eyes with her, remembering her from the previous film, yes. and apparently chomps her hand off. And this happens early, so it's not a spoiler.
Okay.
I have not watched
Sharknado 2 yet.
I know you TiVo'd Sharknado. Did you TiVo'd Sharknado 2?
I TiVo'd both of them.
Okay. All right. If Bret Easton Ellis says I got to watch Sharknado 2, I guess I got to watch Sharknado 2.
I mean, the man wrote Less Than Zero and American Psycho.
Yes.
And what he says goes. That's a bumper sticker I have on my car.
Bret Easton Ellis said it.
I believe it, and that settles it. Yeah. It's funny that you're on his podcast.
I know. It was very out of the blue. Like, I got this random
like
call.
Like, every other human being that's ever been on his podcast is a well-known person.
Yeah. I told him when I got to the studio, I said, I think I'm the first guest on the show that I've never heard of. And he said that apparently his network had been kind of leaning on him to get big names in, but that he just wanted to talk to people he thought would be interesting. And
it's funny that
he has
a network. What's it like to be on a network?
Well, they have like a real studio with a real engineer.
Do they give you money if you're on a network?
I can't imagine that they wouldn't.
We need to be on a network.
That would be lovely.
If they give money, I want some money.
Well, you know, like, look.
T-shirts are fine. Like, it's helping. You know, like, we like your T-shirt orders, but, you know, I need money.
We went to
who pays people to be hosts of podcasts?
Okay. We went to
besides that guy that just drove
by with no muffler
in a really obviously very expensive and important car wants people to pay attention
to important places too. Yeah. Well, we went to the My Brother and Me podcast.
Yeah.
That's part of the Maximum Fun Network.
They sold tickets to that.
But at the end of every episode, it's just something like. Artist owned, listener supported. So I think what happens is that they have pledge drives and they do different things like that a couple times a year. Hmm. And then I imagine Maximum Fun gets some cut of the action, but that the people who make the shows, you know, keep the shows.
Interesting.
And I did, you know, just happen to mention to Jesse Thorne, oh, hey, I'm doing a podcast now. I don't know if he's ever listened to it.
That's really great. It's really good that you're getting out there and networking
with, I don't think he remotely
with
cares.
Important podcast network people.
Well, he's the only podcast network person I've ever actually met, so, you know, I couldn't let the opportunity go by.
Never even met him. So, yeah, that's an interest. We should do that. Let's go do that. Let's go be on a network.
Let's get right on that.
And get some money and a studio. And I mean, we do have a studio. It's right. It's our dining room table. It's a great studio.
It is.
It's close to where the tea kettle is.
And the barking dogs.
And the barking dogs and the crying babies and the helicopters and the street noise. And
So
and eventually, a friend of ours who's about to show up in the middle of this podcast and interrupt everything, he can just join in every once,
we'll put some questions to him if he feels like it.
All right, Guardians of the Galaxy. So go buy all that stuff, all right?
Yes. Keep us afloat. Guardians of the Galaxy, it is a Marvel movie, but it is, except for one thing that would be a spoiler to talk about, not really specifically connected to any of the Avengers.
What's the spoiler?
Well, I can't tell you now or I would be spoiling a thing. Do you want me to pause and tell you and we can come back?
Yeah, because I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, hang on. The man who knew too little about Marvel comics also.
Yeah, you just gave me, we're back, by the way, you just gave me a spoiler that doesn't matter to me, because...
You didn't even know it was a thing.
Because I didn't even know it was a thing.
Anyway, it's not, besides this one thing...
Furthermore, it is a thing that barely, I mean, it's a character in the movie, but...
I'm just saying,
In terms of what that character does and accomplishes in the film...
Nonetheless.
Not important.
Apart from that one detail, otherwise this is all stuff that has nothing to do, so far anyway, with what we've seen in the Iron Man, Captain America, Hulk, Thor movies.
Correct.
And it is definitely, I think, tonally unique. I mean, yes, there were laughs in Iron Man.
Among the Marvel films, it is absolutely tonally unique.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the Marvel films haven't been humorless up till now, heaven knows, but they have not been this... humorous.
None of them have been comedies.
Yeah.
This is a comedy.
Yeah.
This is an action space comedy.
With elements of tragedy.
With a direct through line subplot of ongoing
loss and sorrow.
Grief.
Yeah.
Yeah. With all the main characters are grieving something.
Yeah.
And that is what brings them together ultimately, really.
Right. Our hero, Peter Quill, who's played by Chris Pratt, we meet at the age of 9.
Eight, nine, whatever.
Where he is kidnapped from Earth by aliens right after his mother dies of cancer, presumably.
Like seconds after his mother died.
And,
so, you know, it's a good way to raise a child.
So then, we meet up with him like 26 years later. He's sort of a brigand and a, you know, fortune hunter. And
he's a carouser.
Yeah.
He's a rambling man.
Mm. He's rambunctious. So he winds up getting thrown together with a sort of motley crew of misfits, including Gamora, played by Zoe Saldana, who is the adopted daughter of interplanetary warlord Thanos. Drax the Destroyer, played by Dave Bautista, who has vowed revenge. And Rocket, a genetically modified raccoon with the voice of Bradley Cooper.
Yeah.
And a walking tree named Groot, voiced by Vin Diesel.
Right.
And all these people have had terrible things happen to them, but they wind up fighting together for a common cause to, you know, solve the cosmic what's-its. And
they gotta get the orb.
Yes.
Yeah.
Before it was a cube, now it's an orb.
The orb has to, the orb can destroy everything.
Yeah.
Most pressingly, it will destroy
the planet of Glenn Close.
The planet of Glenn Close and her spectacular wig.
Mm-hmm. She runs the security force for the Kree,
yeah.
Which, if you're a Marvel nerd from going back, you know about the Kree-Skrull War. That was one of the big things that happened. Anyway, they're one of the major races in the Marvel Universe.
Mm.
And, they are under attack with this doodad, and only the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Is it a doodad or a googa?
I liked what's-its better, but, you know.
A knick-knack.
It's a, yeah, paddywhack. It's all kind of things.
I was going to say a sentence that began with the word I, but I've changed my mind. Why don't you continue talking?
Well, anyway, so, you know, it's written and directed, or it's co-written and directed by James Gunn, who did Super, which was a movie that I hated, and Slither, which I did not see, but I know Slither's a lot of people liked.
Terrific.
Yeah. And actually, years ago, did a movie called The Specials.
A word that now means good, when it used to mean terrifying.
What was
terrific.
The word?
Terrific.
Terrific
used to just mean...
Oh, really?
Terror? Something that inspired terror.
Oh, interesting.
And now it means something
great.
See,
the language moves along.
Yeah.
He did a movie years ago called The Specials, which was basically a superhero movie that was all about them not being at work and, like, having rivalries and,
yes,
you know, relationship problems.
Yeah.
It was okay.
Right.
But, you know, this is a solid piece of work. It's very funny. It moves along at a good clip. You know, there are moments where I felt like it could have been trimmed a little. There were some bits early on where I thought it was sort of a little too enamored of its own cleverness. But overall, I had a great time, and I really kind of enjoyed watching the interplay of these characters, and I would definitely want to see what the second, you know, kind of post-origin story getting the band together movie is like now that we know who these people are and they've been established as a thing.
I think that, first of all, it's a wonderful movie. I probably enjoyed it even more than you.
Mm-hmm.
That may be because I don't have any comic book background. When I was a kid, I read comic books all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Archie, Richie Rich,
mm-hmm.
You know, like
Casper,
Little Lotta,
Little Dot.
Yeah, all those
Hot Stuff.
Yes,
Sad Sack.
Pretty much, I did not
Spooky.
Read any of the superhero comics. I read the children's comics,
mm-hmm.
because I was a children.
Yes.
And so no one went around making movies about those people except for Josie and the Pussycats and Richie Rich, right, starring Macaulay Culkin, which I did see.
With the ASD kids?
With the ASD kids. AIDS Services of Dallas is what ASD means. Back in the 90s and the early 90s in Dallas, Texas, I was the volunteer kid movie taker.
Child wrangler.
Yeah. People who lived at this facility who had AIDS, who had children, they wanted those kids out of their hair on Saturdays. My job, drive that giant 18-seater van and a dozen kids to the Big Town Dollar Theater.
Ooh, the Big Town.
Big Town Dollar Theater. Big Town Mall, no longer in existence. Mm-hmm. You can see the exterior of the Big Town Mall in True Stories.
The interior is North Park, which is still there.
In the movie, the mall interior was shot at the old North Park.
Right, before they renovated, yeah.
Anyway, so I took those kids to see Richie Rich for a dollar.
Hmm.
Not a good movie.
I never saw it. I remember being at Robert Abley telling me once.
I don't know why that's news that it was not a good movie.
Right, we were at some LA Film Critics function at some point in like the early 90s, and all these screenwriters were there, and he started talking to one of the guys who wrote Die Hard, who then also wrote Richie Rich. And I think Robert asked him, so how do you create sympathy for the world's richest kid? And the answer was, make him lonely.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I've never seen the movie, so I have no idea what happens in it.
He was lonely. Mm. Yeah.
Is there, like, who plays Cadbury?
I don't remember a thing from about this film.
Is Irona the maid in it?
I don't remember a thing about this movie.
I need the intel about the Richie Rich movie of 20 years ago.
You know what I bet? I bet Netflix has it. I bet you could go rent that DVD. From Netflix, true. If you were super into that idea. Here's
Mean cousin, Reggie Van Dam.
What you need to see before Richie Rich is The Good Son.
Oh, you're right. I've never seen
that. Because that is dope. The Good Son is
Macaulay Culkin.
Awesome.
Culkinist. You're not a comics person.
I didn't come into it with any expectations other than, well, the trailer looks funny, and there's a talking raccoon in it. And so,
for what it's worth, I didn't know this comic book. Like, I'd never read these characters. Like, I was coming into this completely blank slate.
And I was ready for Andy from Parks and Rec to be a space dude.
I see.
Because that's pretty much what's happening here.
Kind
of. Like, the character of Star-Lord or whatever. Peter Quill. He's not as puppy stupid as Andy on Parks and Rec. Because Andy on Parks and Rec is, like, the dumb dog.
Yeah.
That is always trying to lick your face.
Right.
He hasn't gotten over the wants to lick your face quality, which keeps him in the realm of, you know, there's this overly enthusiastic boy in a grown man's body.
Well, for somebody who was, you know, kidnapped by brigands on the day his mother died and was raised by them in the far reaches of space, he seems to have a fairly good attitude.
Yeah. But he's not dumb.
No.
I mean, his character on Parks and Rec is dumb, but that character is so appealing, I think that the people who watch that show will be like, oh yeah, I totally want to watch him cavort about in space. Mm-hmm. I did not expect the film to be as moving as it was. It was very, very sweet and very joyful and very much about love. I mean, the adventure aspect of it is very typical Marvel. It looks like a Marvel movie. Mm-hmm. It moves like a Marvel movie. It is as bottom line oriented as any Marvel movie. It is packaging itself as part of that ongoing series of products, and it fits in the universe. At its most mercenary level. It is utterly conventional in that regard. There's an adventure, the heroes do the adventure, and they vanquish the bads. The bads either die or go away for
sequels.
You know, sequels. And that's it. But so what changes up the formula here is that this one is not just a straight-up comedy. It's the most emotionally direct film of this entire, you know, now army of films that has come out and will continue to come out. So what I find here is, I think, another arm, another tentacle of the Marvel Universe reaching out to people who were formerly never going to go see any of these movies.
Right.
like, this is the one for you if you don't really like all the stone-faced stuff.
Yeah, it's in a way, it's a shrewd business decision. It's like, it'll get the people who are already on board for the Marvel movies.
Even younger children.
Right, but if you are not down for superheroes and capes and whatever, this is not that. This is more Star Wars-y, you know, or as Bibbs and Whitney like to say, at last this generation has its own ice pirates, you know.
Well, I said in my review on movies.com, that this one shares the qualities that the first three Star Wars films had, right, and that the next three forgot to put in the film, which is a sense of humor and a heartfelt quality.
One kind of...
I'm really into it.
One qualm I had about this, and tell me if you agree, I feel like there are a lot of scenes where they talk about how they're friends now, but I never felt like we cross that bridge with them of why are you friends, you know, or why have you decided that you're friends. I didn't always buy it. Like, it was the like, well, they said it, I guess I gotta take their word for it.
The characters are underwritten. They rely on a lot of gesture to get it over. Mm-hmm. And so
the performances are all
fine. If you're really paying attention to that stuff, then you can feel like they're more friends. But
I guess
on the page, the characters are underdone. Mm. You know, I expect over time we will, I hope, learn more about them.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
All right, get on up.
Why don't you first talk about your three and make it quick. Snappy time. A most wanted man. The clock is ticking.
Unlike when only Dave has seen an Iranian film, in which time it's like everybody spread out and get ready to listen to a long discussion.
None of these films are probably as important as the kind of films that I bring to the table.
Okay, Most Wanted Man is adapted from the Jean Le Carré novel. It's about post 9/11 intel. Directed by Anton Corbin,
yeah,
who did Control.
I am going to see it.
I'm sure you will one of these days.
Didn't do it.
Like how you're going to see, you know, Higher Ground one of these days.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, Philip Seymour Hoffman, in I think his last lead role, he's still got a couple of Hunger Games movies still coming out.
Right.
Plays a German intelligence officer, a very kind of hush-hush agency that officially doesn't even exist. They sort of keep an eye out for would-be, terrorist hookups. It's like I said, it's post 9/11. Nobody wants another Mohammed Atta on their watch. And so this refugee shows up who's half Russian, half Chechen, and they're keeping an eye on him. And Hoffman's deal is, he believes in it takes a minnow to catch a piranha and a no. It takes a minnow to catch a barracuda and a barracuda to catch a shark. So he's all about, like, finding these dudes.
It takes a bee to catch the honey in the...
Exactly.
Look, it's our friend.
He's all about, like, not necessarily taking these guys off the street as much as he is sort of, like, turning them and using them to then get somebody higher up the ladder. But he's in conflict with these sort of, you know, police officials and other people who basically want to do the big arrest and reassure everybody that they're on the job, even if that means taking out a potentially, you know, good connection.
Right.
So it's about that. It's very kind of glum. You would love the look of it, I think, because remember how Tinker
Is
Taylor...
Is it gray?
Well, yes.
Excellent.
Remember how Tinker Taylor Soldier Spy...
That's my favorite color of sky. Clothing,
skin,
human being,
teeth. Remember in Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, like all those interiors were super 70s.
Yeah,
but it was because they were new, and that was when the movie was set.
Right.
In this movie, they're still super 70s, so it's basically kind of like it's this bureaucracy that hasn't evolved since the Cold War. So you see a lot of these, you know, Hoffman smoking on the balconies of these brutalist buildings, you know, and it's very cool. I think you would like it a lot. It is. It's not as low key as The American, but it is very low key and talky and whispery and not, you know, spy stuff, you know.
Right.
I liked it a lot. I thought it was really fascinating.
I like a good glum movie.
This is a good glum movie.
I like everything about that. I like a movie in color that should really almost be black and white.
I think you would dig that. Okay, so then Calvary is a new film from Ireland, premiered at Sundance this year. Brendan Gleeson plays a priest in a small town in Ireland. At the very beginning of the film, someone in confession tells him that he was molested throughout his childhood by a priest. That priest is now dead, And because this person can no longer kill that priest, this person is going to kill Brendan Gleeson.
Why?
He goes, because you've done nothing, I'm going to kill you next Sunday. And so the rest of the movie is him kind of trying to figure out who that could be in this small town. And so that kind of carries through. And then his daughter, because Gleason did not become a priest until he was widowed, played by Kelly Riley, shows up. And she has just...
So it's the worst of both worlds, really.
Pretty much.
You're celibate and you still have to deal with having
a kid. Your children, yes.
Yeah.
She has just attempted suicide. The people in the town, even the one that you either... They're either atheists or if they come to church... There's still a lot of resentment towards the Catholic Church. Because you have to remember, in Ireland, not only do you have the pedophile priests, you also have all the pregnant women, you know, yeah. with the babies getting sold off, all that Philomena stuff.
Yeah.
So it's a cool movie about the idea of this institution that is no longer trusted and the crisis of faith that it instills in a country, not to mention in the institution itself.
Oh, okay.
But the dialogue is so... clunky and stagey, and it's either that sort of like Irish whimsy kind of thing we get in movies, or it's people actually talking about, I'm this sort of character. Like this guy says, I'm the atheist.
I was just thinking of Sinead O'Connor in The Butcher Boy as the Virgin Mary. Saying, for F's sake, Francie. Francie.
Well, you've got like.
Francie.
Oh, Francie, you're right.
Francie.
Yeah. Like Aidan Gillen, I think is his name, the guy from the original, from the British Queer as Folk, plays like the doctor, and he talks to himself about it. He goes, well, I'm the atheist doctor, and there's only
so many notes. Is that on his business card?
He says this to the priest, like he goes, there's only so much dialogue I get. It's 10 parts. He goes, it's 10% humanism to 90% gallows humor. Like at various points, people analyze the kind of character they would be in a play or in a movie, almost to the point like you think you're suddenly watching They Came Together. So,
right.
So for all the movies that I've seen that have like this great sort of sparkling dialogue but ultimately aren't about anything, here's a movie that's about something, but the dialogue's just kind of clunky to get there. So I like the end result, but the voyage there is kind of choppy.
Well, Amy Nicholson, whose opinion I trust more than yours, she told me that shit was great.
Well, then you should do a show with her.
Maybe when you're in Venice.
Maybe.
I'll have her be my co-host.
Okay.
And maybe. Then maybe it will last forever.
Maybe. She can put up with your nonsense.
Hey, friend who just walked in the door.
Hey.
All this food on this table.
Food.
It's for you to eat. Eat it. Eat it, nerd. And have some. There's stuff in the fridge. Like, there's a bitter lemon in the fridge. It's really good. There are a variety of other... Why don't you pause it so I can pull out other things for him to eat?
Okay.
Oh, now we're back.
Yeah.
I had to pull out other coldy foods out of the fridge to fill the belly of this friend.
Hi, just, podcasting audience.
Who showed up. This friend...
Just don't let them hear you chew. People hate that.
Yeah. Once I chewed potato chips on the microphone way back in the day, people were very angry at me. I never did it again.
Nope.
Never
we learned
ever
our lesson.
Learned my lesson. So now... Yeah, so this friend, whose name I have not mentioned yet, because why should I?
You can make it a game.
He's here to help you do something with the...
Computer things,
after we're done with this.
Yes.
And...
we need storage for all of our podcasting.
First he was going to work and then eat food, but now he's going to eat the food and then do the work.
He's good. Eats cheese and leaves.
Eats cheese and leaves. You're going to beat me to my own punchline.
Well, you weren't getting to it. I just needed to move it along. All right. The other movie that I saw this week that you did not was Child of God, which is this week's James Franco movie. I was reminded of that that old MST where Mike is doing Jack Perkins, and he says, coming out later will be Joyce Carol Oates to talk about her latest novel in well over a month. So this is an adaptation of a Cormac McCarthy novel.
You just did an MST thing.
I know. Sorry.
Do you want to stop and go back?
No, because I introduced it as such. It wasn't like I just peppered it into my conversation.
A listener pointed out, and here's
and they like it when I do it, but I feel like it's a crutch for me.
I've been with you almost 19 years now, and your references to Mystery Science Theater 3000 have become such a...
An ingrained
part of your speech that I don't even notice when you're doing it anymore. So I wasn't noticing when you were doing it on the microphone until someone, a listener, pointed it out and said that you were doing it.
But they liked it.
They liked it. But you should quit it.
Oh, fine.
Yeah.
I'm working on it. But like I said, I want to
break you of all the things that make you you.
Uh-huh. That's great. Bomb with love. That was, I introduced that one and explained what it was, so it's not like I just slipped.
All right.
So, it's based on a Cormac McCarthy novel that I've not read. It is about a guy in the 50s, I guess, who is already kind of damaged as the film begins. His property is being sold out from under him. It was his father's land because I guess he's behind in taxes or whatever. It's never really explained. He starts living in the woods and kind of growing matter.
The ground in the woods?
Yeah, well, eventually he finds like an old shack with a fireplace that he moves into with like a skanky old mattress, and his only company is these stuffed animals he wins at a fair.
No,
because he's a really good shot.
No,
and and then he commits some rather horrible acts that I won't give away here. And they get horribler.
Who does it star?
This actor who I've never seen before, who's really good, and I think the fact that I've never seen him before is part of what makes him so effective, because you come in with no baggage about this character.
Does he do bad things to people?
Yes.
All right.
I don't want to give away.
All right, I'll probably watch this movie.
Here was my problem.
You say it's this revolting, I have to say.
Well, yeah,
it now.
No, I know you like that sort of thing. My problem with it is that what is this guy's name? Sorry, I want to find it, because I do want to give him a shout. Scott Haze, Haze. Really good, and really, playing a character who you can barely understand. He's like this sort of insane kind of hill folk in Tennessee. And there were aspects of the film that I thought rang really true. Like, there were things that reminded me of, like, driving out, the year I was born, my father bought this plot of land in what was then considered the rural outskirts of Atlanta. It's now the suburbs, you know.
Speaking of shacks in the woods.
Exactly. So there were characters that reminded me of, like, people who lived near where that land was and, with not a lot of teeth and very weather-beaten, but, good folks. And I remember driving by and seeing, it was not uncommon to drive past these sort of stone or brick columns that basically used to be chimneys.
Yeah.
Where the entire rest of the house burned down, but the chimney is still standing.
Right.
There's a moment like that in the film. It was like, oh, yeah, that. But I don't feel like this movie has anything to say about this character as far as what drove him to what he does, or why he does what he does, or even to take the stance of, well, people do this, and this is the society we live in.
Can you pause for a second and tell me the things he does so I can get a sense?
I'm pausing this week.
All right, it doesn't matter.
Okay. Okay, so now I've told Dave all the horrible things that happened in this movie.
Start for life.
Yeah. So anyway, which I'm not objecting.
I am totally going to see this now.
I'm not objecting to what this character does. I'm objecting to the fact that the story doesn't seem to have any point of view about it at all. I'm not saying I want like a pat explanation or anything, but just some context, something that it's not just sort of an exploitive looky-loo horror show. As I believe I told you when I came home from that screening, if you're going to make me smell dung for 2 hours, you better be fertilizing my lawn. it is beautifully made. It's nicely scored. But I just kind of felt like ultimately it's not about anything except just sort of like gawping at human degradation. So there. That's my take.
Sounds great.
Yeah, that's totally a Dave White kind of movie.
All right, get on up.
Get on up.
You are not going to tell me when, where, or for how long I can be funky.
I would never.
That is what James Brown says to the American military.
Yes, sir.
Just as he's about to take the stage.
In Vietnam.
At a USO show in Vietnam. And that is not even the beginning of the movie. That is about 15 minutes in. Mm. The beginning of the movie is James Brown, the 1988
incident.
Late model James Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Driving up to his own business headquarters in a pickup truck, wearing a green tracksuit head to toe, carrying a shotgun.
He's not carrying a shotgun.
His hair.
He goes to get it.
His hair is in that very ladylike swoop that he had back in that period of his life. He walks into his business, fires the gun into the ceiling, terrorizes all of his employees, delivers a monologue on the on how, you know, to determine the course of your own life.
Right.
And the pleasures of taking a dump in your own private bathroom.
Right. Mind you,
he is angry that someone has just done this in the business.
We find out later that it's because he smoked a joint laced with PCP.
Still, though.
That's the beginning of the movie.
If you smoke a joint laced with PCP, I love that the first sort of soliloquy out of your mouth is talking about
taking a dump.
Taking a dump. And where you would like to do it.
Mm.
That's great. So I cannot hate this film at all. Even though I believe it to be a very traditional, conventional biopic put into a scramble machine and you know, its narrative chopped up and it crisscrosses back and forth through time, occasionally juxtaposing in a clever way
specific moments
that, you know, comment on one another in some way. It is the life of James Brown as a James Brown greatest hits record. Everything you've already known about James Brown is in this film, with the exception of Rocky IV, The Finks, and Seneca laxative commercials. Like, oh, all those other things that you know about James Brown.
Actually, I did not know all those things about James Brown.
Well, you...
I did not know that his Live at the Apollo album was such a groundbreaker in terms of, like, people didn't really make live albums.
That, I did not know that either. I learned a couple things.
I did not know that he was an abusive husband.
Oh, I knew that. That was well documented.
Ah, well, I missed
that
one.
He used to beat up the ladies.
Mm.
Mostly when he was doing some kind of, you know, substance.
Mm. Well, in the way that you liked Guardians of the Galaxy more than I did, maybe because you were not a superhero comics reader, I liked Get On Up more than you did, maybe because I know less about music than you do.
It's not about knowing anything about music. It's about Tate Taylor not being a very good director.
Well, I think that
he made The Help, which was
reprehensible.
That is a problematic
film. I think that he does a fine job by what I think is a really good script, which is written
by... The script is fine.
Jez and John Henry Butterworth, the guys who wrote Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
I think that this movie is really smart in the way that it does take things out of order, not just because... Taking things out of order automatically makes your biopic less predictable, because most biopics follow a standard sort of sine wave, you know. But at the same time, I think they do juxtapose different events really interestingly, and I think that there are even sort of some kind of hallucinatory moments where things play out not in a way that you would expect in a very sort of safe mainstream biopic. I'm not saying that this is a wildly radical film.
It is chopped and screwed Jersey Boys. In terms of its...
But it's so much better than Jersey Boys.
Well, yeah, Jersey Boys is like a stinky
And specifically does things that Jersey Boys should have done.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, I think I talked about this one about The Flick. One of our big complaints about Jersey Boys was there's no context in that movie.
No.
They never talk about other musicians. They don't talk about Vietnam. They don't talk about what's happening in the world.
No, you know, this outside of them. Well, you can't tell the story of James Brown without telling about the things that happen in the world, because he's changing the things that
exactly.
are happening.
Exactly. But that is part of what underscores like why you're watching this movie. That was my thing with Jersey Boys. When it was over, I'm like, why did I just watch this for 2 hours? Why should I care about
these guys?
Well,
the four seasons changed nothing.
Well,
that's
exactly.
Why.
But they don't even make an effort to sort of say, well, they influenced something. You know.
The Rolling Stones hung out with both
The Four Seasons
and
James
Brown.
Well, Mick Jagger only produced this movie and not Jersey Boys. So, yeah, he was apparently the music producer on this film.
Frankie Valli partied with everybody, apparently. Yeah.
And there is a terrific scene where James Brown finds out that the Rolling Stones are getting to close out the Tammy Show and not his band, and he blows them off the stage before they even get on the stage.
Cinematheque is fixing the show.
Tammy Show?
Tammy Show.
I think it's finally out on DVD, right?
Maybe,
because it was tied up in music rights for a long time, but now you can get it. So if you want to see actual James Brown. But Chadwick Boseman, who we saw as
that
played, Jackie Robinson in 42.
Here's what's great about
this
movie.
He's so great in this.
Yeah. He's a movie star now.
Yeah.
After the Jackie Robinson movie and this one, he is. You are now getting to witness from the ground floor a major actor coming into his own stuff. He's going to be a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see any other direction for him to go. He's going to be a big deal. Even if this movie doesn't do as well as they want it to, he's going to be a big deal.
I agree. Yeah,
those are my words, and you can mark them.
He's extraordinary, and both as an actor and really, it's no mean feat to get on stage behind a microphone and try to capture what James Brown could do for an audience. But he's lip syncing, but he's dancing, and he is doing all the other things that have to be done on that stage.
I forgot he was lip syncing.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah,
totally.
And he's really funny.
Mm-hmm.
Through the entire film, you know, he takes this man's sort of ascent into megastardom and simultaneous descent into drugs and straight up crazy.
Yeah.
And keeps him sympathetic, even as he's somehow beating up Jill Scott, which no one should ever do.
No. Kids, don't beat up Jill Scott.
And you feel for his predicament all the way through.
Yeah.
So I don't think this is an especially well-made film. I just think that he's so great that he gets it over.
To me, I don't know. I obviously went in with such low expectations because I really did hate The Help. I admired the fact that, you know, here The Help is a movie that implies that racism was just a thing that mean people did and not something that was sort of ingrained and institutionalized in American life.
Right.
Here's a movie where James Brown gets his first pair of dress shoes by taking them off a lynched man.
Yeah, that's actually one of the more powerful sequences in the film, and whether it really happened or not is beside the point.
I thought it was very potent.
I think that what it means is simply, you know, like, I came from this world.
Right.
And I'm going to...
change it.
Kick my way into the other world.
Yeah.
Get out of my way.
Yeah. I want to point out, like, Nelson Ellis as Bobby Bird is tremendous.
He's terrific.
Because in the thankless sort of sidekicky role.
That's
a
word that used to mean filled with terror. And now means
which
really, really
Bobby
good.
Bobby Bird had to be for James Brown. He's dynamite. Brandon Smith, his couple scenes as Little Richard are genius.
Yeah, I don't know who that dude is.
He's a Disney Channel kid.
Where is he really?
Yeah, he's so good in this.
He's really, on screen for 2 minutes.
But wow, does he own it.
It's so great.
And Viola Davis, her the last big scene that she gets as his mother is a really terrific scene. And it doesn't play out the way that the trailer makes you expect that it's going to.
It doesn't play out the way that you think it's going to happen at all.
Yeah. And she and Octavia Spencer are featured very prominently in the trailer and on the poster because of The Help and all.
Yeah.
They're not in it much, and Octavia Spencer really doesn't get a huge moment, but Viola Davis does get like one knockout scene that's really terrific. So yeah, I like this movie a lot.
Octavia Spencer gets to show off her new figure. She's been on some kind of shake diet. Like, she was on Ellen DeGeneres talking about it one day.
Shake for breakfast.
I don't know what it is. It's some product. Like, she's working for them. Like, she's advertising for them. Yeah, and
not to be confused with Jennifer Hudson for Weight Watchers.
No, different. It's a different thing.
Different Academy Award.
Anyway.
Monique, on the other hand, could care less.
Monique has her own lane. Monique does as Monique pleases.
Yes, she does.
Alive Inside. That's the last film.
Yes, Alive Inside. Let's not forget it, which opened last week in New York and this weekend in L.A. And
yes,
I think it's making its way around.
It's making a slow roll out across the country in the coming next few months.
It won the Audience Award at Sundance this year. And
it's a very short film. It's about 80 minutes long. It's about a social worker named Dan Cohen, and I'm forgetting the name of the director of the film. You could look it up and find it for me. A social worker named Dan Cohen, who started volunteering at nursing homes and sort of stumbled across the idea that playing music for people who have Alzheimer's.
The director's name is Michael Rosato Bennett.
That's right. Playing music for people with Alzheimer's or who are suffering from dementia for some other reason opens up neural pathways.
Yeah.
And creates an energy in the people who are hearing the music. It's got to be music, you know,
of their childhood,
or young adult years, music that they have always loved.
Yeah, the movie suggests that basically the part of your brain that remembers music is one of the last parts to go.
Yeah.
So that if you play music for people with dementia, it's not a fix-all, it's not a cure,
fix their dementia.
It does allow them these sort of at least moments of lucidity and engagement.
And it
even for people who are severely shut down.
Quality of life.
Yes. Makes them happy.
And it's and this I know this to be true, although I didn't make that connection to all these other, you know, outcomes, because a year after my mom's stroke, you know, it took her a very long time to get from the day of the stroke to recognizing people and being able to, you know, process information and stuff like that. So a year, it also, for new listeners, it robbed my mother of her speech and her ability to use the entire right-hand side of her body, right foot, right arm, everything. So she lived in a nursing home and was tended to around the clock. Like, she needed around-the-clock care. And I would go visit her, and one day I brought her a CD by Phoebe Snow. Phoebe Snow was her favorite singer, and I said, "Hey, I brought you a Phoebe Snow CD." And she just looked at me like, "Great, what's for lunch?" Like, there was no
recognition.
Yeah. And and I said, "Phoebe Snow, your favorite singer." Like, I'm going to repeat it, and she's going to know what I mean.
I said, "Try saying it louder. That would help."
"Poetry Man, your favorite song by your favorite singer is on this CD." Nothing. So I put the CD in the little disc man that I bought her, put the headphones on her. Here's something about the song Poetry Man by Phoebe Snow, which was a hit in 1974. She doesn't get to the chorus until like the first minute of the song. Like, the first 55 seconds is her going, like little jazz. And so you... Finally, like, she's sitting there.
Pick up the pace, Ricky Lee Jones.
Stone-faced for 50 seconds, and I'm thinking, oh, no. She really doesn't know what this is. And she's forgotten it, and it's gone forever. And what if this is the way it's going to be? And what if it's degenerative? And what if she doesn't remember me next time I come visit? And what? And then she gets to the chorus. She gets to the chorus, and the entire look on my mother's face changes. And her eyes go really wide. And she goes, "Oh!"
Nice.
And then she starts, like, swaying her head and singing, you know, because my mother only could say one thing, "muh." And every "muh" became every word. It was "muh, muh, 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 muh." But she let out a bunch of "muhs" in that moment.
It was her "I am Groot," and you were her rockets.
It was "I am Groot." Yeah, no, that's the thing. Like, I got... aside, a little digression here. I got to where I could tell what all the mamamas meant.
Oh, no,
like,
you were really good.
I was quite proficient in the language of mamama. So that was this amazing moment. Now, unfortunately, she could not operate the disc man on her own. So any music that came her way was later because of me. Like, we're in the car listening to the radio, or here, let's put the disc man back on, you know, like something like that. But it never became a regular therapeutic aspect of her life, which is what this film is about. It's about pushing this as a therapy,
right,
and trying to get past nursing home bureaucracies and the insistence on
drugs,
instead of an iPod mini. Yeah. And so as an advocacy film, as an activist documentary, it's very important. It's very moving to watch these old people, people with dementia, come alive when they hear the songs that they love.
No, I saw this movie last year when I was pre-screening docs for Sundance.
Yeah.
And it's the first movie I've ever watched for Sundance that made me cry.
Yeah.
It was so powerful, and having seen your mom go through it and all, just in general,
It's very moving.
I was very excited that it actually made it all the way.
It is an activist documentary. It's definitely in the line.
It is about what it's about.
It's about, it's like Fed Up. It's like, An Inconvenient Truth. It's got an agenda.
Yeah.
And it is pushing that agenda. And at the end, it is really like, it's a fundraising movie. I mean, like, there's a website at the end. Like, go here and see what you can do. Mm. Push this in legislation and all that stuff. Documentaries like that, I appreciate that they exist. This one in particular, because it's close to my own experience and something that was important to me
before
my mom died in 2012. But, you know, filmmaking, let's talk about this as a film. It's pretty repetitive and it's not especially artful and, you know.
But it's effective, and it's moving.
Yeah, you know, and it is those two things.
There's a place for
and
that.
And so I recommend you see it because it'll make you cry.
There was a YouTube clip of one of the people in the film listening to music.
The old man who opens the movie.
Right, and that went viral, and that was like the beginning of the process of them making the movie. So
he's wonderful. He's like talking about Cab Calloway and impersonating Cab Calloway. And the guy, I remember doing this and going to see the
And he had been completely shut down before then. So, yeah. So if this sounds familiar to you, you might have seen that clip back in the day. But, yeah, it's totally worth seeing this movie.
One letter, one top 10 list, and then we're done.
And DVDs.
Oh, yeah, DVDs. What did I say?
Yours is the documentary Dream Deceivers.
Oh, yeah, Dream Deceivers, the documentary about the Judas Priest suicide trial in the early
80s. Yes.
And how they were not guilty of making a kid kill himself just simply because they were a heavy metal band.
Exactly.
And it's a very cool time capsule sort of thing. And also, I think it's important that we have these sorts of films as reminders, because people always want to bring this stuff up in some form or another. You know, let's blame the easy.
Yeah, let's blame
the easy thing
because Marilyn Manson.
Yeah, we are thoughtless human beings, and we need something quick to understand.
Because let's blame gun violence on video games. Yeah. No, you're right. It's the quick fix is never the answer, pretty much.
All right, what's yours?
Mine is also a movie about the devil's music. Phantom of the Paradise, the Brian De Palma movie, comes out on Blu-ray.
One of the dirtiest films I ever saw as a child.
Really?
Yeah.
Dirty how?
There was sexy stuff in it.
Not much.
But I was a kid.
At the kid, I was 10.
9
so,
or 10 or whatever. However,
it's the 40th anniversary. Yeah. I did a screening a couple years ago in Dallas with Paul Williams, who stars in the film and wrote the music as well. And he's amazing. And yeah, it's a cool film. The Blu-ray apparently has him being interviewed by superfan Guillermo del Toro. So I definitely want to check that out. But yeah, it's a really nice Blu-ray edition. One of my favorite sort of undersung De Palma movies, and a very cool film, so people should check it out. Letter. Z.
Dear Dave and Alonzo again.
Okay.
That's what he says. Dear Dave and Alonzo again, after having praised your sign-off in my first email, I do feel it's worth mentioning that I recently found out that Secretly Timid and The Lunch are two distinct podcasts.
Well, The Lunch isn't even a podcast.
And not one named in an Echo and the Bunnymen-like fashion. Sincerely again, Christopher. The Lunch is no longer a podcast, at least for now. It is, at the very least,
on hiatus.
On hiatus. But yes, you are right.
Sorry if I didn't. If I ran those two
that
together
was
too
not,
quickly.
Those were not two things. They were not.
They were two things.
They were two things. They were not one thing.
Right.
They were not Tamara and the Scene. If you know what that was.
I do not.
Minneapolis band. Post-Prince sort of flashy R&B.
Were they on the Paisley Park label?
I don't know. Hmm. Wait. Hang on.
Okay.
Now
we can look this up later.
Active from 85 to 89, du jour, 2000 to 2001.
Exactly.
They were associated with Jesse Johnston.
Oh, there we go.
Jesse Johnson. So, yeah, they were connected to that world.
Nice.
Tamara and the Scene. I don't know why they popped into my head. I remember them.
All right.
Yeah. I was listening to the Butthole Surfers back then, but I remember Tamara and the Scene. Okay, so we've got a top 10 list. Hello, gentlemen. I hope this finds you well. Thank you for always providing me with at least an hour of entertainment a week. Your podcast is always a highlight in my week. The best, worst movie-going experience I've had in recent memory. Wait a second. Was this a top 10? Oh, he does. He concludes with a top 10. Okay. He starts with a movie-going experience.
Oh, it's all in one. Okay.
The best, worst movie-going experience I've had in recent memory was during the press screening of African Cats on the Disney lot. Which was, as you recall, so he was in the same...
I think we were at this screening, but go on.
No, we were not in this screening.
Oh, okay.
Apparently something else.
We have our own story. I think we've told it, though. Go on.
No, wait. This is the same story. He was in our screening. Funny. Where's his letter from? Wait. It's from Manny.
Ah, well, there you go.
Our friend and colleague, Manny Lozano.
Who has been on the show before.
Yeah. It was, as you recall, marketed as a live-action Lion King, but turned out to be very much the opposite. All of the Sam Jackson narration was getting me through just fine, mostly because I was adding the occasional mother effer to the dialogue to give the script a little pep, until a small child proceeded to lose her issue... while a zebra was being torn to bloody bits by a pack of lions on screen. Why that didn't trigger a complete retooling of the marketing campaign, I will never know. Just hope that the mouse is paying for her therapy.
Yeah, that kid left two or three times before they finally left.
The mother kept dragging her in. The mother obviously was supposed to be there to see it for work.
Right.
And thought, oh, I'll take the kid. And the kid was melting down because all of the animal-on-animal
eating
that was going on. The other great experiences are a tie between an old woman screaming out, "Let me see your dick," during one of the quieter moments in a screening of Magic Mike.
Classic.
And when I saw The Sound of Music on the big screen for the first time, I had only ever seen it on VHS/DVD before, at the New Beverly a couple years ago, and I cried during the entire opening because gay. And now, here are my top 10 movies I can watch over and over. Knife away. Number 1, Mean Girls.
All right.
Number 2, Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah.
Number 3, West Side Story.
Mm-hmm.
Number 4, Chicago. Fine. Number 5, The Fifth Element. Yes.
All right.
Number 6, The Incredibles. Mm-hmm. Number 7, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah.
Number 8... The Chipmunk Adventure, the pre-CGI animated chipmunks in all of their 80s glory. No,
didn't
my
see
friend,
it.
No. Just because you were a child, when something happened doesn't make it good. You may still be able to watch it over and over again, but I would recommend that you watch it with merciless eyes, the way I had to do with Santa and the Three Bears.
Oof. Yeah.
Number 9, Back to the Future. Oh, also, and Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. Also, and Dr. Dolittle. And whatever elder movie that I loved as a child that are actually quite terrible.
I still defend Dr. Dolittle, but...
Back to the Future, Empire Strikes Back. You're 95% knife, Manny, because Alonzo hates The Fifth Element.
Wait, you're going to give him Chipmunk Adventure?
You're 85% my knife, Manny, of veryaware.com and the internet. All right, we're done.
All right, as always, we thank...
Friend has eaten.
We thank Blue for our wonderful theme music, and you can get all of his goodies at bluetopia.com, BLEUTOPIA. Visit linoleum-knife.com, pick up a Linoleum Knife t-shirt for $20, or an extra episode for $1.99, and you can PayPal us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. The t-shirt is $20. Give us your size and mailing address, and give us your email address if you're getting an extra episode. Check out our friends on the internet. Go to ChristyLemire.com. If you're a SiriusXM listener, check out The Frank DiCaro Show and Derek and Romaine, which we were on for about 2 seconds last night until we discovered that the producer had called in everybody who ever calls in on Friday to do That's Entertainment and realized that our week is actually this coming Friday, so we'll be on it then.
We bowed out because we're so great.
Absolutely. Check out the Rotten Tomatoes podcast, the B-Movies podcast with
Whitney. We didn't want to show everyone else up.
Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley, Fat Guy franchise of the movies, the Criterion cast, the Schmoes Know, Film Spotting SVU, Podcrash, the Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid. Speaking of the Schmoes,
they are going to be our guests next week.
Yes. So make sure you don't miss that. You can subscribe to this show for free at iTunes and leave us a positive review. It helps people find the show. Somebody left a nice one recently, and sadly I don't have your name in front of me, but you know who you are, and thank you. You can stream the show at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com or on an app at our Facebook page, Linoleum Knife Podcast, which you should totally go like. Follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast. Check into the show at tvtag.com. Once again, our email is linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Send us your questions, your comments, your top 10 lists, bottom 10 lists, funny incidents from movie theater going, anything else. We would love to hear from you.
I am asleep for the danger, awake for the money. Goodbye.